16-loop quantum gravity, so that we sort of say bring everybody on the same wavelength about the viewpoints, issues, problems, etc. And this seminar is in that spirit, and it is about the issue of information loss during the black hole evaporation process. And I'm going to present a global view of the current status, but from our LQG perspective. I should apologize in the beginning that Jorge actually traveled to Uruguay just yesterday, and so I got a message from him saying that he was leaving Monday morning, and so I sent him the copy of my slides, which were ready at that time. I had hoped to put some finishing touches, particularly give some additional references, which I could not do. There's also one or two typos that I will correct. Okay, let us go to the next slide, slide number two. So I'd like to divide this talk in two parts. The first is a shorter part in which I would like to tell you about or present to you a broad brush summary of the main points of the long and sometimes confusing history of the subject of black hole evaporation. Hawking's discovery was already since some 43 years since the discovery was made, and there have been sort of various viewpoints. Obviously, I cannot summarize everything, but from the current perspective, I'm going to summarize the points which are still very, very relevant. And so here I'm going to tell you about the Hawking effect, the inclusion of a back reaction, the issue of the purification and page time, which has dominated the subject, especially in the last 10 years or so, and then the ideas from string theory, which are motivated by the ADF-CFT duality and unitarity of the CFT, and then consequences of these kind of ideas, making some standard assumptions, including the firewall scenario. In the second part, I will present an update on the loop quantum gravity viewpoint. I'll say more about the loop quantum gravity viewpoint when we come there. But let me just say right in the beginning that, again, even from this, in this part, there are many developments. And because of the time constraint, what I will do is to focus more on the issue of just of information loss. And therefore, I'll not be able to touch on very interesting developments that have occurred. For example, papers by Barrow, Haggard, Rovelli, Vidotto, and others, which are to do with this idea of fireworks and the fast radio bursts, and which can make contact with phenomenology. I'll not be able to discuss those things. I will touch on them again at the very end. Okay, slide number three, which begins with information loss, the main ideas. So the figure on the right-hand side is just the standard Penrose diagram of a star, which is shown in yellow, collapsing to form a black hole. And what the figure shows is that we got fusional infinity, which is denoted by Sky Plus. And then we can look at the past of that fusional infinity, and we see that the past of that fusional infinity, in other words, the space-time region from which we can send signals to fusional infinity, is not all of space-time. And what is excluded is the black hole region B in black, and then we've got a future singularity. So now, if I give myself some initial data, for example, for a Maxwell field on Sky minus, and I evolve it forward in time, then we see that, in fact, some of the field will fall up into the black hole, and part of it will be reflected back to Sky by the curvature. And therefore, I will not really get the information on Sky plus is not enough to reconstitute the incoming state on Sky minus. And the same thing is true about the quantum fields. If I specify some state of the quantum field on Sky minus, then I would not get the state on Sky plus does not have sufficient information to reconstruct the incoming state. So this is really the issue of the information loss. There is a second and independent point, which has to do with black hole uniqueness theorems. I say that second is independent because this information loss issue just has to do with the fact that there is a future boundary which is the singularity, in addition to the path to the null infinity that we have. So we got null infinity, but the future boundary is not a future, not just Sky Plus, but we also have the future singularity. The point about the black hole uniqueness, well, even when the black hole uniqueness theorem does not hold, for example, in higher dimensions, there still will be information loss because of this singularity present, that is to say the Sky Plus not being the full future boundary. Now, when we go to quantum theory, again, in step number one, we just do Hawking, which is we just analyze quantum field theory on a black hole background space-time, completely ignoring the back reaction. Then in the original derivation, we had three approximations, that the space-time is treated classically, and it represents, for example, a star collapsing to form a black hole. The second is that the quantum fields are test fields, so we ignore the back reaction. And the third is that the matter field which collapses is classical and is distinct from the test quantum field that is considered. In the full quantum gravity regime, we will have to remove all these three assumptions. Now, if the incoming state again at Sky minus is vacuum, then what one finds is that the outgoing states on Sky plus union future horizon is again a pure state. But if I trace over the horizon modes and just look at Sky plus, then I find that the outgoing state at Sky plus is a mixed state, which furthermore, this was the key point of Hawking's calculation, to show that at late times, it's a thermal state. Now, many of the students and younger researchers get confused about what one means by saying that a state looks thermal at late times, because state is a global concept. So let me emphasize that what this means is just that you're given a state which is a globally defined object, but we can look at the observable algebra, kind of quasi-local, associated with some part of Sky, in this case, part of Sky, which has to do with late times, and we can just evaluate the expectation values of all such quasi-local late time observables in this state. And the statement is that these are extremely well approximated by taking the state to be a thermal state and evaluating those expectation values of the restricted class of observables which are tied to the late time. Again, this is not surprising, because singularity in the future serves as the sink of information. Slide number four, inclusion of back reaction. So in the last transparency, I had three assumptions, and the second assumption was that one ignores the back reaction. So in the first approximation, what one can do is to consider semi-classical gravity, where one calculates the stress energy tensor of the radiation, quantum radiation, called the semi-classical Einstein's equation, in which the right-hand side is the stress energy. Still reaching. Hello? I think some high power, they can switch it off. Hello?
Hello, can you hear me? Hello.
Hello.
Abhi, there is a lot of disturbance at LSU. Is there disturbance elsewhere too?
Yeah, we have a lot of
noise. I get a very confused voice from France here.
Can everyone hear elsewhere? There is a lot of disturbance at LSU.
Hello?
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 Hello, this is Marcel.
Carlo, can you hear clearly?
I'm sorry, can you hear?
Can you hear clearly at Marcel?
I hear, this is Carlo. I hear very badly. There is a lot of disturbance. I barely get some time.
Okay, so what we are going to do at LSU is we are going to switch off, and we are going to reestablish the connection in a minute. So please redial.
With the inclusion of the back reaction, and I just want to emphasize that even as of today, we do not have a four-dimensional calculation of the stress energy tensor, which is everywhere in the space-time, so to say. And even in the spherical symmetric case, even in the spherical symmetric case, it is difficult to calculate the stress energy tensor when the geometry is time evolving, as it would be if you take into account back reaction. And of course, it's even more difficult to solve the semi-classical equations. However, the general expectation in the field has been based on the physically motivated heuristics that Hawking used to propose a space-time diagram, which is given in the figure on the right-hand side. So in that figure, the idea is that the singularity, is reducing, and therefore the horizon is shrinking. And so the idea is that at the end of this horizon, if you like, which is a line at 45 degrees, the black hole has shrunk to zero size. Therefore, there is no more mass left. And therefore, in the upper triangular region, space-time geometry is well approximated by just Minkowski space-time. However, as the Penrose diagram makes it clear, the future boundary of space-time is not described plus, but there is still a singularity. Therefore, the information is lost also in this approximation. State at scribe minus determines the state at scribe plus, but not vice versa, because we'll have to give the information that, so to say, fell across the horizon. The horizon has not disappeared. This led Hawking to advocate that quantum mechanics should be generalized. This was in the 70s, late 70s, early 80s, and that the dynamics should not be just given by unitary operators on the Hilbert space. But in fact, the S metric should be replaced by what is called the dollar matrix, which allows kind of pure states to evolve into mixed states. In other words, the dynamics is defined on the space of all possible states, not just pure states, and it is not unitary. And so there was a mathematical framework, which is quite well defined, which was proposed at that time. Now, this scenario that the information actually is lost is in fact preferred by several relativists. And in particular, Penrose, for example, uses these kinds of considerations in his cyclic conformal cosmology. Again, for our power purposes, it is not that critical to know exactly how it is used. I just want to tell you that several experts in relativity community like this scenario in which the information actually is lost and we do not have a unitary S-matrix evolution. However, this is not the case throughout the community, as the next transparency number 5 discusses. And there is a possibility of purification, and some relativists pursued the idea that the state on sky only appears to be thermal for a long time. Again, let me repeat what I said a while ago. What this means is that perhaps the state on sky is actually a pure state. But if we sample it with observables which are localized at an intermediate time on sky, so basically before the semi-classical reaction becomes very important, back reaction becomes important, at that time the state would be well approximated by the thermal state. On this particular class of observables, the expectation values of the real pure state are well approximated by taking instead a thermal state and evaluating those expectation values. So this is what some relativists have pursued this idea. And in particular, Don Page came up with this beautiful idea of a beautiful analogy, which is analogy with lighting a piece of charcoal and letting it burn out completely. So this has nothing to do with general relativity or black holes. This is just an experiment that we do all the time. Namely, we light a charcoal, and the instant the coal is lit, there is no radiation, but the charcoal itself is in a highly excited state. Then for a long time, there is radiation, and the quantum state of the coals, of course, changes and is correlated with the state of the outgoing radiation. At the end of the burning process, the ashes cool down, and we believe that they're completely cooled down, then they would be in their ground state. And the important point here, really important point here, is that this state is unique. I mean, if there was a small degeneracy, it would still be no problem. But let us assume that the state is actually unique. If the state is unique, then radiation cannot be correlated. I mean, all the radiation states, so to say, is correlated just with a unique vacuum state, if you like, of the ashes. And therefore, the quantum electromagnetic field itself should also be in a pure state. So entanglement, so to say, disappears because the coal has a unique final state. And therefore, for photons, the correlations that seem to be lost early on because the state of the radiation was entangled with the state of the coal, these are restored at late times. And this is by long wavelength modes. When the coal is cooling down, is going to kind of reducing its temperature, going towards zero temperature, the radiation will be long wavelength. So this is a general scenario that, in fact, for a long time, if you just look at the radiation state looks thermal, but at the end of the evaporation process, because the state of the coal is just a unique vacuum state, the radiation, the electromagnetic field is in fact in a pure state. And the idea was that perhaps a similar thing happens in black holes. So Don Page pursued this analogy to develop a scenario on how purity can be restored in the black hole evaporation process. Again, at the end of evaporation, we have Minkowski space-time. So it is like this unique state which was proposed, which we for the ashes that we had in the coal. And so the quantum state of geometry appears to be unique, and therefore the radiation at sky plus should also be in a pure state if the entire process is going to be unitary. And then the question is, how is the purity achieved at sky plus? And this was, there are proposed plots which are on the next slide. So in the next slide, number 6, what I'm going to discuss is possibilities for restoration of this purity. So slide 6, which says page curve and page time. There are two figures here. On the left-hand side, on the vertical axis, one has several kinds of entropy. And on the right-hand side, and on the horizontal axis, we have got time. So if you look at the two dashed lines, so there is a one dashed line which starts at 0 and rises, essentially diagonally, that is the entropy of the radiation. So basically in the external field approximation, if I look at radiation entropy, that is just increasing. The other curve starts at a finite point on the y-axis and decreases. That is the entropy of the black hole itself as measured by just by the surface area of the black hole. And these two curves then clearly intersect somewhere. And that intersection point is the page, the time corresponding to the intersection time would be the page time. And now the idea is that what we should consider is not just the black hole or the radiation entropy, but we should properly calculate the entanglement entropy. And at least personally for me, this point was always a little bit not clear, and this was really clarified by the work that Bianchi, DeLorenzo, and Smirlak and others have done using making precise the notion of the entanglement entropy. And then qualitatively, the entanglement entropy curve would look like the dark line on the left-hand diagram. The entropy of the total entangled entropy would increase for until the page time, and then it would start decreasing. If the final state is a pure state, then the entanglement entropy would be zero. So that is the page curve. On the right-hand diagram, the same process is shown using the Penrose diagram of the evaporating black hole that Hawking had first proposed. Namely, there is a kind of a magenta line that is a page time. The region C on Sky Plus is the radiation that is coming out before the page time. And then the idea is that these correlations which appear to be lost during the period C are restored during the future period, which is Mart A. And the idea is that we got this radiation R finally would be in a pure state. So now I go back to this entanglement entropy calculations of Bianchi, De Lorenzo, and Smerlak and others. And their calculations, through a careful and detailed consideration, showed that if the page curve turns over when the black hole entropy is still macroscopic, so say 50% of the original mass of the black hole, so we are assuming a black hole, say, of a solar mass, a macroscopic black hole, which is evaporating, and it has shrunk to about half its mass. If this happens, then the purification takes place on the order mq. And this is the same as the Hawking time. Now let me just tell you that the for a solar mass black hole, m cubed corresponds to about 10 to the 55 giga years. The age of a universe, as you know, is 14 giga years. So this is huge compared to the lifetime of the universe. But we're talking about issues of principle here. And the statement is that if in fact the black hole, the page curve turns over, then the roughly speaking, the entropy seems to be lost. The page time is about 10 to the 55 giga years. And then purification takes another 10 to the 55 giga years. However, if in fact, this scenario is generally preferred because the other possibility is that the entropy, entanglement entropy keeps increasing until the black hole has shrunk to a microscopic size. Say the mass of the black hole is a thousand or a million times the Planck mass, and then the page curve turns over. In this case, their consideration showed that the time of pore purification is much longer. It is of the order of m naught to the fourth, which is now becomes about 10 to the 93 giga years. So it's really huge in this case. Of course, both are very huge. Now, I told you that page. The general preference in the particular in the particle physics community and also much of the relativity community has been that the page time is of the order of m cubed. So when the black hole has lost about 50% of its mass, so this seems reasonable at first. But I just want to point out that there are at least two issues which are a little bit disturbing. The first issue is the following. If the page time is about half the mass, it corresponds to m cubed, so when the black hole has lost half its mass through Hawking radiation, then we have the following situation. Consider two black holes, one which has two solar masses, and the other which has only one solar mass. So when the one solar mass black hole starts evaporating, the entropy is the entanglement entropy is actually increasing, right, for some time. Whereas when the two solar masses black hole has reached the size of one solar mass, then the entanglement entropy is supposed to turn over. So therefore, the entropy curve, I mean, what the entanglement entropy is doing is very different from an old black hole that from that of a young black hole of the same mass. And the second point is that if I now looked at the what one might say total entropy, which is the entropy of the radiation at scribe plus, the entanglement entropy of radiation as scribe plus the entropy of the black hole as measured by the black hole area. Then the statement is that if I take any two times after the page time, then during this period, the total of this, that is to say, the entanglement entropy at scribe plus the black hole entropy as measured by the area, this sum is actually decreasing. Even though the black hole is very large. Now, this is a little bit surprising because to some people, this might look like a violation of the second law. Some other people would argue, no, this is not a violation of the second law because what we should consider is really the not the entanglement entropy of radiation, but some kind of a coarse grain entropy, etc. So I don't want to enter into that discussion now, but I just want to tell you that there are two points which are a little bit counterintuitive when it comes to turning of the page curve at the page time being half the evaporation time, or when the black hole has lost half its mass. Next slide. And finally, we come to the string theory scenarios. So in all these considerations so far, it is explicitly or implicitly assumed that the space-time diagram that is that was given by Hawking, and which is reproduced on this slide again, is correct. It has a future singularity. That is correct. That is what is happening during the evaporation process. And therefore, in fact, even though there is actually a future singularity, that is to say, even though Sky Plus is not the entire boundary of future null infinity, we still ask the question if, in fact, the state of Sky Plus could be a pure state. And the second assumption is that this space-time has an event horizon which serves an absolute one-way membrane. So in spite of this, in the string theory community, there is also a strong belief in the ADF-CFT conjecture. So the attempts to decode what happens in the black hole region inside the event horizon, the region between the singularity and the event horizon, from the conformal field theory side, have not succeeded. Still, because the conjecture has had so many successes in other areas, it seems natural to invoke unitarity of the boundary conformal field theory and conclude that the S matrix of the black hole space-time, which is shown on the diagram, should be unitary. This implies that the outgoing state at Sky Plus should be pure. Now, as I said, in GR community, this seems kind of almost absurd, right? Because there is a future boundary. In addition to Sky Plus, there is a singularity as a part of the future boundary. And how could the S matrix be unitary? Isn't it obvious that some information or part of the state would be lost into the singularity? But nonetheless, motivated by the ADF-CFT conjecture, there is a kind of strong reason for people to think to pursue the idea that the S matrix is unitary, but they also use this particular space-time. Then how could it be S matrix be unitary? So basically, what is happening is that there is Hawking the star collapses, forms a black hole. The black hole is characterized by the mass and the angular momentum. And then for a very long time, as we said, of the order of m, the mass of the black hole to the cube, that is to say, of the order of 10 to the 55 giga years for a solar mass black hole, the radiation looks thermal and its character is completely described by the mass and the angular momentum of the black hole. And therefore, if you like, there are modes which are created by this geometry. One mode goes to infinity and one falls into the black hole. On the other hand, because black hole has an event horizon, the mode which has fallen into the black hole is clearly lost. On the other hand, if you want unitarity, then correlations as Sky Plus must be restored. And therefore, at late times, there should also be a mode as Sky Plus which is correlated with the early mode which arrived in the Hawking radiation at Sky Plus. And now what we find is we are forced to then conclude that the early mode at Sky Plus is correlated both with the mode which fell into the horizon and with the late time mode which comes out as Sky. But then considerations of quantum mechanics tell us that there is quantum monogamy. That is to say, a mode, the early mode which went out of Sky, cannot be correlated with two different modes. And therefore, there is a contradiction. So the point is that in GR community, just by looking at the diagram, it seems somewhat absurd to hope that we will have an S matrix which is unitary at Sky Plus if the space-time diagram looks like this. In the string community, one sort of they try the idea that it might actually be the S metric should be unitary, and in this, but assume that this space-time, I should emphasize that in many of the discussions, the assumption that this is the space-time diagram is not even stated explicitly because it is taken to be completely obvious. Okay, so in the string community, then one finds that there is a contradiction with quantum monogamy, and therefore they conclude that one of the assumptions is that led to this picture is incorrect, and the favored possibility is that semi-classical physics will fail to hold at the horizon already when the black hole is macroscopic. That is to say, there should be a firewall along the horizon. So this concludes the first part of the talk, which is really the main survey. If there are any questions, I will take them, and then I would like to go to the second part. I'm sorry, this has taken a little bit longer than I had hoped because of the interruption in the mic. Are there any questions?
This is Alex from Marseille. Just a little question. The account you made, told us about the firewall, it applies also to the page scenario, right? Just a clarification.
Yes. So the statement is that if, in fact, the page scenario, which says that the evaporation time, that the black hole starts, purification starts, and the black hole is about half the mass, and the space-time diagram looks like what we said before, it applies also to the space scenario. And this point is going to be discussed in the next slide. Okay, let me go to the next slide then. Is that okay, Alex?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, slide number 9. So let's summarize the points that I've made so far. First point is that if Sky Plus is not the entire future boundary of space-time, after the black back reaction is taken into account, we are led to the Hawking S-matrix, dollar matrix scenario, in which generalized quantum mechanics, there is not necessarily unitarity, and pure states can evolve into mixed states. Second point, even if Sky Plus is the entire future boundary, we encounter puzzling features in the semi-classical regime if the page curve turns over when the black hole is macroscopic, and these are the features I mentioned at the end of the slide on the page curve. Now, what is the LQG viewpoint? And this is kind of goes back to almost more than 10 years ago. The viewpoint is that it is natural to expect that the viable quantum gravity theory, the singularities will naturally be resolved. In loop quantum gravity, this expectation is met in a variety of cosmological models and also in the Schwarzschild black hole. I just listed here for the Schwarzschild black hole, the latest papers on this. There are many, many references. As I said in the very beginning, I was going to update the list, but I could not. Although the gravitational collapse is yet to be treated in detail in loop quantum gravity, the accumulated results strongly suggest that the singularity will be resolved. Then the consequence is that the situation changes vis-a-vis both the points at the top of the transparency. Because of singularity resolution, the quantum space-time and its Sky Plus is quite a bit larger than the classical space-time of general relativity. So there is new room for restoration of correlations that seem to be lost, and this opens the possibility that the page curve turns over when the black hole is microscopic, avoiding major surprises in the semi-classical regime that I discussed in the last 3 or 4 transparencies. Slide 10. So what I did was, what I'm doing up here is explaining this last point about the LQG in a little bit more detail. But even here, I'm just summarizing the situation, and the important features will be discussed in the subsequent transparencies. So the general expectation is that in the neighborhood of singularity will be replaced by quantum region. So look at the figure on this page. And let me go through this figure in some detail because we're going to be coming back to it several times. This figure is a large region which is shaded in blue. That represents the semi-classical regime where the black hole still has a mass which is semi-classical, say for example 1,000 or 1,000,000 times the Planck mass at the end of the semi-classical region. So in this semi-classical region, we see a kind of a ladder-like shape and an arrow coming in from sky minus. That is the infalling radiation. So it's a white dwarf type collapse. That black, that matter comes in from infinity and collapses and forms a black hole. So to the past of this region, space-time is flat. And in the classical relativity, to the future, it would be Schwarzschild. But of course, because of dynamical Hawking radiation, it is not Schwarzschild. The semi-classical metric in the future region is much more complicated. So what forms in this region is a dynamical horizon, which is shown in this solid black line. So the dynamical horizon forms when the matter starts falling in. So basically, it's a whirl tube of marginally trapped surfaces. The area of this whirl tube increases as the matter falls in, so in that shaded region where the matter is falling in. And in this region, the dynamical horizon is space-like. And then it becomes time-like, and its area starts decreasing because the Hawking radiation is taking the mass away. To the future of this semi-classical region, you have got a red region, which is the quantum mechanical region, which replaces the singularity. So that is where there are strong quantum corrections. And then to the right of this quantum mechanical region is just a white region, which is sort of the conjectured Penrose diagram. And that, again, so what we see here, that's the quantum space-time is larger than the classical or even the semi-classical space-time, and that, and Sky Plus is also larger there. So let me go back to the text now on the first paragraph. So the neighborhood of singularity will be replaced by the quantum region, which is shown in red, in which the quantum corrections would be large, as in loop quantum cosmology. But this region will be localized, since loop quantum gravity effects die rapidly once the curvature falls below a millionth of Planck length square. So as in loop quantum cosmology, there may be a quantum corrected, also as in loop quantum cosmology, there may be a quantum corrected dressed effective metric in this region. We don't know that there is such a metric, but there could be such a metric that is adequate for describing the propagation of the quantum radiation in this region. Then the quantum, if there is such a metric, so this correct quantum corrected dressed effective metric is kind of a smooth tensor field, but it has all kinds of H-bar corrections, and Einstein's equations are badly violated, and that is why we do not have a singularity. If you have such a nice, smooth tensor field in the entire region, then the space-time diagram would look like what I have written down there. And then the space-time would be, again, asymptotically flat, and Sky Plus will be complete to the future boundary. And therefore, the raison d'etre of the information loss is removed, because now Sky Plus is in fact the entire future boundary. There is no other future boundary. So in this general scenario, there is no event horizon for the dressed effective metric. What forms and evaporates is the dynamical horizon that is shown in the dark black line up here. The space-time region shown in blue is well described in the semi-classical gravity, and purification occurs on Sky Plus beyond this blue region, that is to say, beyond the future of the last ray in the semi-classical region. Last ray is the future boundary of the semi-classical region. Now, one might think of the last ray as being in some sense an event horizon, but that is not the case, because even in the semi-classical region, one can check in an example that Sky Plus up to the last ray is incomplete. And for the event horizon, when we say that event horizon is the boundary of the past of future null infinity, that in that case, future null infinity must be complete. This essential feature, this essential requirement was pointed out by Bob Garosch and Gary Horowitz already in the 70s, because if we don't have this completeness requirement on Sky Plus, then even Minkowski space can have a black hole. So it is important that Kraepelin be complete. And in the semi-classical region, it is not complete. Therefore, the last ray is not an event horizon. And if you take the full space-time, then, in fact, the path of the full space-time is entire space-time, and entire space-time, and therefore there is no event horizon. And because of this, then, the implicit assumption on the firewall scenario is violated. Are there any questions?
Yes, okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes, can you hear me? Okay, this is Jurek. So in Carlo's model of and Hall's model of space-time of collapsing and bouncing black hole, we have a black hole horizon. Of course, it's not global event horizon. This is only local notion of horizon, which later becomes white hole horizon. So in your paradigm, this black hole horizon, and which later becomes white hole horizon, here is replaced by the dynamical horizon. Is this correct?
Yes. This is a personal choice, but I really feel that using the term white hole horizon confuses the outside community enormously, so I prefer not to use it. But other than that, the statement is that the fact that information can come up, so that red boundary, if you like, of the dynamical horizon, the extension of the dynamical horizon with the red boundary up there, that can be regarded, if you like, because information comes out of it, you could say that that region is like a white hole. But I prefer, really, really prefer not to use it because it confuses people and they think that this is some science fiction kind of thing and there is no reason to confuse people. So personally, I don't use that terminology. But scientifically, what you said is right.
So why is your model of space-time significantly different than that of
right.
Hall and Carlo?
Right. So as I understand it, in that model, the kind of a whole bunch of mass has to come out because of some quantum effect. And therefore, the mass comes out of the quantum effect on a time scale of the square of the black hole. That is to say, it comes out much faster than the Hawking radiation. Here, I'm assuming that, in fact, the Hawking radiation is really coming out, and the primary way that the black hole is losing mass is through this Hawking radiation. If I had time, I could explain both these points. Most of the considerations that I have apply also to the other scenario, because my considerations have to do with purification and unitarity, and those issues will have to be also addressed in the other scenario. So the difference between the two is really about when the mass is coming out in the two cases. So for concreteness, I am taking the conservative viewpoint here, which is kind of used in string theory and other literature, that in the semi-classical regime, what we have is a Hawking effect, and until the black hole shrinks to microscopic size, the mass loss is due to the Hawking radiation.
Thank you.
Okay, sure, let me go on now. So now, this is just a general picture. In the next few transparencies, I'm going to come back to the general picture and explain important features of this particular space-time because they are critical to our understanding of the evaporation process and purification process. So slide number 13. So this is the first point in blue is just a side remark. One sort of first reaction, and this, for example, is something that was emphasized by people like Sean Hayward, and also in the very early days when Martin Boyerwald and I proposed this scenario, I also thought that this was a real possibility. The first reaction would be that just look at the semi-classical region, and since the dynamical horizon here is time-like, already the semi-classical region, purity could be restored because information could come out of this time-like region, and that could actually lead to restoration of correlations, and purification, large part of purification could happen already in the semi-classical region. But this is not so. It should say not so. because there is very little time between the end of the collapse and the start of the quantum region along the vertical line. So this is kind of a point that is difficult to explain without, you know, my having a pointer and showing you the where I'm looking at in the picture. But just take it for granted from me that there is not enough time just before the last ray appear for the information to come out from the time-like portion of the dynamical horizon appear to restore the correlations. This is a conformal diagram, and in order for things to make sort of visible, I have blown out, or rather Aruna, who made this diagram, has blown up the part of between the formation of the, between the time at which the incoming matter falls in and hits the R equal to zero line, if you like, in the blue region, and the quantum region. Those two things are very close to each other, and there is just not enough time for much information to come out in the semi-classical region. So let's just assume it, and we can come back to that later if you want. So the purification has to happen after the dynamical horizon has shrunk to a microscopic radius of, say, 10 to the 3 Planck masses. So the Planck, to the mass inside the dynamical horizon is only about 10 to the 3 Planck masses. But since the Hawking radiation has been thermal for a long time, of the order of 10 to the 55 giga years in this scenario, and in the of the time scale of 10 to the 17 giga years in Carlos scenario, the purification at Skyplus requires that there should be a huge number of states inside the dynamical horizon when its area has shrunk to about 1,000 Planck length, right? Because we got these modes which are created outside the dynamical horizon, if you like, in the Hawking radiation process. One mode goes to Skyplus, and the other mode, its partner, has fallen across the dynamical horizon. And our point is that that is going to come out in the white region in the space-time diagram beyond the semi-classical region. Therefore, at the end of evaporation process, there have to be a huge number of modes which are stacked inside the dynamical horizon, even although the dynamical horizon has such a small area. And this is generally believed in the particle physics community to be impossible, right? I mean, how can it be that when you've got such a small horizon area that there can be so many modes, so much information stacked into it? But there is one obvious possibility, and that is what Wheeler called bags of gold. These are shown on the bottom of the picture. I shown two bags of gold there. Don't worry about why there are two. They just corresponded to the two surfaces that I drew on the line. Large volume spatial surfaces bounded by small horizon area. The important thing is that these surface of these balloons should be thought of as three surfaces, and the where it is pinched, the balloon is pinched, that should be thought of as a horizon. So you can see that there is a very small area at the neck of the balloon. That circle there is supposed to be the extremely small area, and that area is actually enclosing very large volume. So such configurations are admitted in general relativity, and this is what was suggested by Wheeler, that such configurations are in a different context may be important and so on. So they are admitted. But the key question, as I said at the bottom of the slide, is this realized in the semi-classical space-time on surfaces such as V equal to V1 and V equal to V2 in the Penrose diagram? I have shown there are two surfaces, V is equal to V1 and V is equal to V2, which are supposed to be, which one might hope, have large volume but extremely small throats. So can they be actually realized? So let's go to the next slide up here, and we want to do semi-classical analysis. In this slide, there are two typos. The one is that the white diametric in red, which is written down, it should, of course, have 2GM, which M depends on VR divided by R, minus 1. That minus 1 is missing. And the second is that there was supposed to be a remark about the nice paper of Christodoulou and Carlo Rovelli about the volume operator, which is missing up here. Okay. So with these caveats, let me start from scratch. So Christodoulou and Carlo have, and Rovelli have written this paper. They looked at just a collapse occurred by Shell, and they looked at inside the horizon, and they looked at one point on the horizon, and three surfaces can be drawn which have huge volumes, but which have the surface area that is given to you. In that case, there are two differences. The first is that the geometry inside the horizon is time independent. That is, there is no killing vector field there. I mean, time independent. Yeah, I mean, there is no killing field. In that case, the statement is that the geometry to the future of the collapsing shell is a Schwarzschild geometry. And the second thing is that here I'm going to look at various cases, that is various surfaces which have small throats on the dynamical horizon. I'm looking here at the dynamical horizon rather than the event horizon. Okay. So let's start at the top of the transparency. We'll consider a black hole formed by the gravitational collapse with mass about one solar mass black hole and focus on the semi-classical space-time, which is in blue. We make two very plausible assumptions, that the metric has a wide diaphragm, and the mass function M of V is given by the Hawking formula, which tells us, for example, that the lifetime of the black hole is about about M cubed. And the Hawking formula says it is just that the black hole behaves like a black body. dmv by dv is equal to h bar divided by m squared times g squared. So both these assumptions are satisfied. For example, the two-dimensional versions of both these assumptions are satisfied in the very detailed analysis of CEGS's black hole in the semi-classical space-time that was done. And these assumptions are common in all the literature that I have found so far. So now we consider space-like three surfaces inside, space-like three surfaces, which I denote by letter sigma, inside the dynamical horizon, defined geometrically. So these three surfaces sigma just have constant R. And R is a geometrical object because the space-time is spherically symmetric. And we're going to focus on three surfaces. The figure shows only two because the figure is busy, and drawing a third surface would have made it difficult to kind of, the labeling would have been rather difficult. So I'm going to consider three surfaces, such as the ones shown like a large volume spatial surface. Large volume spatial surfaces bounded by the small dynamical horizon. So the first surface is when the black hole has shrunk to about one-tenth of its mass. So the dynamical horizon sigma 1 has one-tenth solar mass, and so the radius is about 300 meters because the black hole has the solar mass black hole would have about 3 kilometer radius. At the dynamical horizon boundary, the second space-like three surface goes inside has the mass of a moon, right, which corresponds to the radius of the dynamical horizon to be about a millimeter, and the third is going to be a dynamical horizon dynamical horizon boundary of this manifold sigma 3. The third manifold is going to be a special manifold sigma 3. The mass at the dynamical horizon is about 5 times 10 to the 4 Planck masses. So the radius area is about 10 to the 3. Ten to the plus 3 Planck length. So that is what I'm assuming here. These are the three things that I'm going to consider. So in the next transparency, we see what happens. On the left-hand side, again, I got a blown-up picture of the previous Penrose diagram, large, which show the infalling matter with the shaded region, the dynamical horizon, and V is equal to V0 at the beginning, at the start of the vacuum region at the end of the collapsing matter. And then V is equal to V1, V equal to V2, and V equal to V3 would be the three large surfaces that sigma 1, sigma 2, sigma 3 that I am considering. Now to the text. For these three times, the semi-classical evaporation phases, we have, when the mass is about a 10 solar masses, the proper length of the cylinder, right? So we got this surface sigma, it has horizon, it is S2 cross R topology, and the surface area is of course constant, it is just 4 pi R squared, and I have kept R to be about 300 meters, so it is 300 meters squared. But the length of the cylinder is huge, is about 10 to the 50 light years. So the linear mass black hole, it grows and becomes about 10 to the 55 light years. And by the time I come to the Planck scale black hole, it is 10 to the 79 light years. Ori and I consider also another family of three surfaces on which the Kretschmann scalar is constant, so it's Riemann tensor squared is constant. In the classical space-time, this family is the same as R equal to constant surfaces, but not in the dynamical semi-classical space-time. Along these surfaces, R changes along the three manifold sigma, and R grows. So you start at the throat near the dynamical horizon and goes inside, and at the end, the surface has a large radius, and the ratio of the R max to R min is about 4.7 in case 1, 250 in case 2, and about 10 to the 10 in the case 3. So these are the three balloons that I have shown there in the case 1, case 2, case 3, where, in fact, you get larger surface area at the end. And the length is still astronomically large, but so far I have not been able to calculate it reliably. I only made a crude estimate. Amos Ori and I looked at it in some detail, but Mathematica refused to perform the required integral, so we just have very crude estimates. But the important thing is that the lengths are still astronomical. So this is the main point that I want you to remember. So summary of transparency 16, summary of part 2 so far is the following. Because of the singularity resolution, there is no event horizon. Purification can start in earnest only to the future of the semi-classical space-time. Now, this is plausible because the geometry in the semi-classical region is such that it easily accommodates extremely long wavelength modes. We have got these three manifolds inside the dynamical horizon, which are extremely, extremely astronomically long lengths. Now, why is a long length important? Because the longer the length, that means the wavelength of the modes inside can be extremely long. If the wavelength of the modes inside is extremely long, that means that their frequency is extremely small, which means that they carry very, very little energy. And therefore, you can have a lot of these modes with a very large number of such modes, even though the dynamical mass, the total mass of in these modes is tiny. So the important thing is in red that the horizon mass in these stages is not, in the dynamical stage, is not a measure of the number of states inside the dynamical horizon of an evaporating black hole. Point in blue, these modes leak out of the boundary slowly of the quantum region and move towards Sky Plus. As they move to Sky Plus, because of the redshift, their wavelength increases even further. And considerations of Sky Plus, for example, those of Bianchi, De Lorenzo, and Smerlak, they show that the purification time scale at Sky Plus is likely to be extremely large, of the order of m0 to the fourth. And again, recall the analogy with the burning coal. At the end, we've got this in burning coal case. Of course, we don't have astronomical scales there, but still, the modes which come out have very, very large wavelength at the very end when the coal is, when the ashes are cooling down to roughly, ideally to zero temperature, they're emitting very long wavelength modes. And then the statement is that these modes are correlated with the early hot thermal modes. Last point, I would like to say that even though we got this quantum region in the red, I don't think it is appropriate to think of it as a remnant in the standard particle physics effective field theory sense, because although it lives very long, it is spread over astronomical landscape. So it's not like a tiny little elementary particle. When it leaks out, wavelength is further redshifted and becomes hugely larger. We do not see, Amos Ori and I, and I think Eugenio and various people that were thought about it, we cannot see any arguments for copious production of such elementary particle type remnants in car accidents, how those can apply to these soft or infrared configurations. So this idea that you cannot have remnant because they are ruled out, because they can be produced in car accidents, you know, if you got configurations with huge amount of entropy and small mass, they could come out, they could be produced. I don't think that this really applies to these kinds of configurations, which are not elementary particle size, but astronomically large. Next slide. So here, what I've done so far is that I've, of course, finished the first part, and in the second part, I finished the first three points, which are, in fact, kind of the main, give you the main flavor of the thinking in loop quantum gravity. And thanks to Jurek's question, I also was able to say a little bit about how Carlo and Haggard and Vidotto and Orlean Simons and Barrow's scenario compares to what I'm talking about. My main point is that I'm focusing not on how the mass comes out, but on how the purification occurs, unitary is restored, and so on at Skatla. Now, there are last two points which are in green, and which has to do with non-tuer vacuum at Skyplus and soft hair of Hawking, Perry, and Strominger. I hope you can bear with me because I would like to explain this. A lot of people have asked me about this point. Unfortunately, I will not be able to give you any great details, but I would like to explain what the issues are in two or three transparencies that follow. So let's go to the next slide, which is 17. So far what we've done is basically told you what the general scenario is in loop quantum gravity. Now I'm making a detour to talk about some issues which are raised in this recent preprint. So these issues have to do with infrared sectors and purity at Skyplus. Again, the next two transparencies is a little detour. I will round up by relating it to what I have said so far at the end of these next two transparencies. Well, what we have concluded so far is that at late times, we have got this infrared radiation. This kind of radiation also feature in the recent proposal by Hawking, Perry, and Strominger. And I'll now make a small detour to explain my understanding, I should emphasize that, of this point. It seems to be similar to the loop quantum gravity viewpoint I've explained so far. Now, the main point, as I understand, is the following. They would like to say that at late times, we have no radiation at Scribe. And therefore, in the early days, people said that, well, therefore we got Minkowski space, and therefore the state of Scribe of geometry and matter is just the vacuum state that is just given to you. It's unique, it's a vacuum state. So it's like the burning of the coal, if you like. It's just that vacuum state. And therefore the idea was that, well, how is the radiation purified by itself, because what is left over is just a unique vacuum state. But because of infrared problems, the quantum vacuum is in fact degenerate. This is the point that is being made. That is to say, the end point, even though we got a vacuum state classically just like Minkowski space, on a mechanically, it is in fact infinitely degenerate. And these vacua are labeled by a complex function on a two-sphere. So this is the main point that they're making. They arrived at this point because of the earlier work that Strominger and collaborators had made that I will explain in the next transparency. And I'll also explain the relation with much older work in our community, which had come to the same conclusion, but from a different point of view. Now, at the moment, let us suppose that we do have huge vacuum degeneracy in the future. Then what happens in the evaporation process? Let us divide the discussion into two parts. In the first, let us just look at the external field approximation. Then we have got the incoming state back in on Sky Miners, and the outgoing state is going to be a pure state, but it has a component on the horizon and a component on Sky Plus, and therefore it's an entangled state with coefficient Aij, with state I on the horizon and the state J on Sky Plus. And there, and we obtain a density matrix on Sky Plus if we trace over the horizon state. Then we have a thermal density matrix which looks thermal at late times. Now, the proposal of Hawking, Perry, and Strominger for restoration of purity is the following. The incoming state is some state psi in. They don't specify it, but let us suppose it is some coefficient state peaked at, say, some radiation which is falling in from Sky Minus, which would classically make the black hole. Then the outgoing state, they would like to say, is again an entangled state. There is this J, the state J, which are again referred to the radiation at Sky Plus, but we also have a state QI theta phi, which are label, which correspond to the degenerate vacua. That is to say, in the future, we've got lots of states, all of them representing vacua, configurations with zero or negligible energy, and these configurations have, but there are many of them, and because there are many of them, there are as many as there are function of two spheres, so there are infinity many of them, therefore they could be correlated with the part, with the radiation modes J at infinity. And therefore the state is entangled in this particular sense. So to say the early radiative modes are entangled with late time modes or late time states or late time degenerate vacuum. And the but again on Sky Plus we could arrive in this description we could arrive at a density matrix by tracing over the vacuum modes. If you just trace over QI and assume that there is or if you like a sort of think that well there should be a unique vacuum laid by that idea, if you trace over, I don't care about the differences between the vacua at late times, then I would trace over these vacua and then I would obtain a thermal density matrix. And so this is the general idea. Had there been no vacuum degeneracy, had there been a unique state at the end, then the purity of psi out would not be possible if the all the modes J at Sky Plus are due to Hawking radiation. So this is the broad stroke idea, and now I would like to explain to you what this vacuum degeneracy is all about. I will do it rather briefly, and I will use the Maxwell field as a primary example, both because it is sort of easy to explain, and also because in their paper, Hawking, Perry, and Strominger only have really the Maxwell field as the illustration, and they don't really discuss the gravitational field very much at all. So slide number 19. So Hawking, Perry, and Strominger have based their analysis on the interplay between the geometry at Sky Plus and world identities. More precisely, Weinberg had used them to talk about, to arrive at some results on soft gravitons and photons. And these were used by Strominger et al. To show that there is a relation between these soft gravitons and soft photons and the geometry at Sky Plus. There's also very nice papers by Alok and Miguel which take this further. But these sectors were derived in the general literature in the 1980s, already in the 1980s, using algebraic quantum field theory framework. So we knew that these sectors existed for a very, very long time. And I will now explain those older results because they may be easier to understand to the loop quantum gravity community. This is going to be an extremely brief and sketchy discussion, and in the next transparency, I've just given references. For those who are interested, can look at them and see the details. Consider a Maxwell field now. This is a big detour again. Just consider a Maxwell field in Minkowski space-time, denoted by FAB. And we've got the algebra of field operators. Now what we do is to consider a shift automorphism, a mapping from the algebra of the field operators to itself, which preserve all its structure. This is denoted by lambda. So lambda operates the field operator and just shifts it by adding to the field operator a multiple of the identity, where F not AB is a classical solution. It's a well-known result used in quantum optics often that this lambda is unitarily implemented on the Fock representation if F naught, the Maxwell field F naught, has a finite one-particle norm. And in that case, the vacuum is sent to the coherent state C, which is labeled by F naught, the coherent state which is peaked at the classical field F naught AB. But because of infrared issues, there are perfectly decent classical solutions, F naught AB. They have finite energy, finite angular momentum, finite momentum, everything is perfectly fine. And they, in fact, can naturally arise in physical processes, in classical electrodynamics. But these F naughts do not have a finite Fock norm. And then, if I try to, but I can still construct this automorphism with such an F naught. And then, these automorphisms then give me inequivalent, unitarily inequivalent representations of the canonical commutation relations, which are inequivalent to the Fock representation. In this new case then, the vacuum expectation value of F of the field operator will be F naught, and F naught is a state which does not have a finite one-particle norm, if you think of it as a one-particle state in the Fock space. But the issue has transparent description at Sky Plus, geometrically very transparent. FAB is completely determined by its data at Sky Plus. Any Maxwell field is determined by, you look at this Maxwell field, FAB, you pull back the two form at Sky Plus, and you dot into it the null normal n to Sky Plus, then you obtain an intrinsic one form on Sky Plus, which is written as script A, script E. This E, because it is pulled back to Sky Plus and is perpendicular to n, has only two components, the angular component called m and m bar in Newman-Penrose notation. And the statement is that you can show that the Fock norm is finite if and only if on Sky Plus the integral of this one form E along each individual generator of Sky Plus is identically zero. Or in the Newman-Penrose notation, you can look at the radiation field, which has the same information as EA. Phi naught 2 is just EA dotted with MA, the complex angular vector. And if the integral of the radiation field is identical to zero. Therefore, the infrared non-Fock sectors are labeled by these two functions, which are two components of EA, or the complex components of Phi 2 naught integrated on each generator of Sky Plus, and this is the complex function Q of theta phi. Physically, this Q of theta phi is essentially the difference between the electric and magnetic charge aspects at I plus and I minus. Those of you who, like in the Warsaw group, who knows null infinity very, very well, this all will be completely transparent. For others, you just remember that on Sky Plus, you can have, from Sky Plus point of view, it is obvious that there are field configurations which don't belong to Fock space, and they give rise to infrared non-Fock representations, and these play an important role even in quantum electrodynamics if you want to do the S matrix properly. The next transparency is a very big brief remark at the top, and then a whole bunch of references at the bottom. As I mentioned, these results were known in the 80s, and furthermore, in the asymptotic quantization framework, also provides the Hilbert space for in and out fields on Sky plus and minus, even for nonlinear gravitational field. And as for the Maxwell field, there are non-Fock representations. They're also labeled by a complex function on the two sphere. And now that complex function Q of theta phi is just the integral of the Nuys function or of sigma dot at the along each generator of Sky plus. Or it is a difference between shear at the two ends of Sky Plus, and as people know, this is related to the enlargement of the Poincaré group to the BMS group. So the statement is that there are these infrared sectors, and they're important, both in for Maxwell theory and gravity. So this was a lightning review of what is happening with the infrared sectors, and this is what Hawking, Perry, and Strominger are using. So to round up then, I got three figures up here. The left-hand figure is a loop quantum gravity paradigm that I've been emphasizing. The middle figure is the Hawking, Perry, and Strominger, is taken directly from Hawking, Perry, and Strominger. It is the figure number 2 in their paper. And the last one is the original Hawking proposal that I have written down. Since we already discussed the figure 1 and figure 3, let me focus on figure 2. I have to confess that the paper is rather sketchy. The Hawking, Perry, Strominger paper is rather sketchy, and therefore they don't really explain this figure in as much detail as we would have liked. So you have got sky minus and sky plus, and instead of writing as a triangle, they have unfolded it. So if you like, you can draw a vertical line from the apex of this figure to the lower end point of this figure, and just look at the right-hand side of picture, divide this by a vertical line into two parts, and just look at the right-hand triangle. So diamond is just bisected by two triangles along a vertical line, and just focus on the right-hand side, and then that figure is exactly like the other two figures that we have up here. I purposely left the original figure here just to say that I've taken it directly from them. So in this figure then, the line in loop in red is the infalling matter. And then the statement is, so to the past of that red line, we've got Minkowski space, and the future of the red line, we've got dynamic space-time. It would be Schwarzschild if there was no Hawking radiation. But because of Hawking radiation, we've got dynamical space-time, which is spreading out there. They have these yellow lines. The 45 degrees parts of those yellow lines are called H and supposed to denote horizons. And I would like to comment, so I'm just stating facts, and now I'm going to comment on these three figures. So first of all, there are similarities. Note that the middle picture is similar to the first picture, so the picture on the left, and not on the picture on the right, because sky plus is the only future boundary, right? We don't have any another boundary in terms of singularity, which is there in the picture on the right. There is no singularity. There is no firewall. There is nothing going out to infinity or the horizon up here, which is supposed to be the firewall. The horizon in the third picture was supposed to be the firewall, and we don't have that. Seemingly, thermal modes that reach sky plus at intermediate time are correlated with the late time infrared modes, infrared state. And that is what I was saying in the first picture on the left-hand side, that the thermal modes in the blue region are going to be correlated with the modes which are coming out in the white region, which are infrared modes. So there will be this correlation between them, and that is what is restoring the purity. But there are also differences, and I don't want to imply at all that it is clear that what they are doing is the same as what we're doing. They're just close conceptual similarities. The horizons that in yellow 45 degrees line in the HPS picture diagram are completely mysterious to me, because that diagram has no singularity. There seems to be sky plus, which is complete. So obviously, these lines are not event horizons. These lines are also not dynamical horizons, because these, particularly the part before the red line, is all flat space-time, and therefore there are no marginally trapped surfaces. So this is not a dynamical horizon. It looks to me just like a random null cone to me. Or any null cone would look like that. I do not know why they are calling it a horizon at all. Then secondly, there are apparent differences in the notion of horizon hair. They talk about some horizon hair, which refers to this horizon, and I don't understand this at all. On the other hand, there are things called horizon hair, which are to do with our dynamical horizon that I will explain in the summary part, which is I'm coming to now. Then the in-between picture they call semi-classical space-time, but in every case that we have had semi-classical space-time, there is actually an effective dressed space-time. There is actually a singularity in the semi-classical space-time. So perhaps what they mean by semi-classical space-time is what we mean by effective dress space-time. That is to say, what they mean by semi-classical space-time may be the same as what I meant by the Penrose diagram of the effective dress space-time in the left-hand picture, figure number one. Okay, so this is the end of the talk. Oh, sorry, there's one more topic, but I'm going to completely skip over it. You can read on that type. There is actually a difference between purification versus unitarity. So let me summarize. Go to slide 23. Thanks to the advances over the past 2 years, we have refined our understanding of the salient features of quantum dynamics of black hole evaporation compared to the original 2004 paradigm in LQG and the detailed work on the CGHS, which was in 2008 and 2010. We really have understood it much, much better now. The general scenario is that the purification occurs after the semi-classical epoch. This is something that was mentioned explicitly in the case of the CGHS black hole, but we understand the geometry inside much better. Several issues about entanglement entropies had not been understood at that time, which we understand much better. This approach violates a key but often implicit assumption in the firewall scenario, namely that the purification occurs after the semi-classical epoch and not during the semi-classical epoch, and we have no solid reason to cast doubt on the physics of semi-classical gravity during the phase where the black hole is microscopic. There are any other people, and then if there are questions, I'll take them, but I'm really sorry that this is late. So the last thing is just open issues. First is that we'll need some help from numerical relativity people in solving the semi-classical equations in four dimensions. The second point is that it's one thing to have these infrared modes, but another quite different thing to say, the detailed calculation showing how these correlations are restored and purification occurs. Then the question is that the same thing question can be asked for the fireworks type scenario. And as I mentioned in answer to Jurek's question, as I understand it at least, there the emphasis has been more on space-time geometry and on phenomenological issues such as the first radio burst. But now, in that situation also, one would like to understand how purification exactly occurs. And finally, the important thing is quantum dynamics. We really have to better understand the quantum region. Is there a useful dressed effective metric there? If not, does the small throat persist or does it pinch off? For example, as the water drops, the pinching off would actually yield a baby universe, and then the scenario changes. Because although there still could be a global unitarity, it would be lost from our universe. But perhaps charge and energy momentum and angular momentum would still be conserved because the universe, the baby universe would be spatially compact. But only quantum gravity can really solve issues like this. So thank you, and I'm sorry because of some interruptions and various things. I've been too long. I tried to be very pedagogical and introductory in the beginning. If there are questions, I will be happy to take them.
So, any questions? Abhay, I have a small question, so if you can give some insights, that will be very helpful.
Yep.
So, we know like some of the works in which the Schwarzschild singularity has been resolved using Kandorsky-Sachs model, the general expectation which you showed does not born out to be true. Like we get some scenarios in which the space-time curvature does not become small as in the isotropic cases. And the effective dress metric essentially retains a lot of quantum character. So how do you think like the situation will change there? Do you think like it will help alleviating some of the issues of the information loss, or do you think like we have to be more careful in such cases?
Yeah, I think that's a very good question, and it's very important. I think what we would have to do is to really look at similar analysis, but not with just Kandorsky-Sachs metric, but a metric in which kind of there is this M of V. The mass function is not fixed, but it's a function of V, mm-hmm. and actually is decreasing, right? And see what happens there, particularly because that is what is going to be happening in the real picture, that there is not really going to be, already in two-dimensional models, we see that the singularity is weakened. So in the full theory also, we would not have a singularity which corresponds to, you know, the full mass M that we started out with. That mass is actually decreasing. And so one would like to know what the effect of this dynamical decrease in mass has on the consequences of the singularity resolution. I think that would give us, that is what is needed, and that would give us huge insight. It could be that even in that case, you don't get a nice effective metric. In that case, there is actually a quantum region. To me, that makes the problem much more difficult, but also much more exciting, because then for the first time, we would have concrete, although mathematical problem, as opposed to observational one, in which we'll be able to see what detailed predictions of quantum gravity sort of tell us. In other words, we'll be able to distinguish between various scenarios, right? I mean, if in fact, for example, using one mechanism, you get a singularity resolution or you get one kind of quantum gravity. So the singularity resolution is of one type and another mechanism gives you another type, then we'll be able to compare them to see what physically makes sense and perhaps be able to distinguish between them and get insight into which of the two mechanisms is likely to be physically preferred. So to me, this analysis that you talked about is very important, but it will be good to do it for the case, not of just Kandorsky-Sachs, but slightly more dynamical version of it, in which this mass function goes to zero as using the Hawking formula.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you.
I believe that most people have signed off when the bridge was cut.
Yeah, I think so too. I think no one has joined, so probably we can close if there are no more questions or comments.
Yeah, okay.
I have a comment. This is Alex.
You are nice.
So you explained very nicely how, this new discussion concerning this new discussion that is not so new, as you pointed out, concerning the non-uniqueness of the vacuum state that could be related to this infrared mode. And that is used to argue by the authors, by Hawking et al., to argue that this could be a way of understanding the microscopic origin of black hole entropy. And as you put it, in loop quantum gravity, somehow, this is very similar to our picture in loop quantum gravity, where we are saying that the origin of black hole entropy has to do with this microscopic degrees of freedom of the horizon that we count in the description of black hole entropy. And so, in a sense, in the application to black holes, we are also thinking that the ground state or the smooth geometry, in fact, the geometry of the horizon or the macroscopic geometry of the horizon does not completely fit all the degrees of freedom. And there are underlying UV degrees of freedom or Brighton degrees of freedom, which are the ones that lead to the black hole entropy. And so along the same line, it seems to me that it's also a natural possibility is that what we call the vacuum Minkowski state could be highly degenerate in new quantum gravity due to this ultraviolet degrees of freedom. Similar as in the case of the horizon. If that possibility is correct, then this leads to another possible resolution of the information in which correlations, in which the final state of quantum gravity and matter fields is purified by correlations with this underlying degrees of freedom, which is something I tried to put together in a recent paper. So that was my comment.
Thank you, Alex. I mean, I agree that there are several possibilities that one could see what happens beyond the quantum region. This is what I meant in answer to Param's question a little while ago, that one might be able to discriminate between various possibilities if we understand the quantum region much, much better. So, please correct me if I'm wrong, but as I understand it, the scenario paradigm that you're proposing is in some sense almost opposite, in the sense that in the paradigm that I was describing, and also the paradigm that to some extent Hawking et al. Are talking about, the kind of the new element is the infrared, but your point is that maybe the new element is actually ultraviolet. Is that a fair statement?
I think so. But to combine with the idea that we have been using that viewpoint at least as far as the calculation of black hole entropy is concerned, I agree with what you said.
Okay, but I think that it may be that the black hole entropy calculation could also be done from the other point of view, in which, you know, you have got these moats inside the black hole, right? Which are these very long infrared modes and the geometry, the three volumes and so on, and perhaps these modes end on what we call punctures. So, I mean, there may be even some interesting relation between ultraviolet and infrared. You know, some intertwining that is going on between ultraviolet and infrared. So there may be two different ways of counting these modes in terms of, as you're saying, the ultraviolet counting in terms of punctures, interpreted geometry, and also in some ways that, you know, each of these punctures is given is coming from some tiny from a long wavelength mode inside of the Hawking modes which are falling inside. So I don't know. I mean, these are all kind of new kind of ideas, and I think we should sort of pursue all angles, right? I mean, that's what I feel. I mean, I really feel encouraged that we could make really concrete progress now. I mean, I felt that somehow, at least personally, I felt that this firewall argument was diverting too much attention and really was not where the lot of progress could be made. And I feel that the topics that you're talking about, the ideas that you're raising now, and, you know, their interplay with perhaps infrared thing. Perhaps infrared things are just wrong, and perhaps it's all just ultraviolet. So it would be good to sort of to decide. But for that, we really need this understanding of this quantum region. Until then, these are just paradigms and scenarios. Of course, they are important because they drive detailed calculations, but we need to do those detailed calculations, I think.
Thank you very much. I agree with your viewpoint.
More questions or comments? If not, let's thank the speaker again.
Question, but he is talking with me. This is Alex again. So he will ask the question and I ask the question because he cannot ask it directly, not connection. So I have one more question from Carlo, okay? Would that be okay?
Please go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, Carlo.
Carlo, I'm sorry, we cannot hear anything. You have to speak louder or there was interruption also with Alex, but Alex was loud and so we could hear it, whereas you are too soft.
So the question, Carlo, is whether you think that your analysis implies that it could be objects which have vibrating holes inside that are very long way. Is that correct? They flow frequency compensating membranes, for instance, like the flight side. But whether your analysis allows them to think, this is the question.
I don't think I understood completely. But if the question is whether we have to go all the way to the Planck size or we can stop before, the statement is that we can stop before, right? We don't have to, because, I mean, as in the firework scenario, if you want to stop, that there is some other mechanism by which the mass actually came out, and so we don't have to go, Hawking radiation does not have to go all the way to Planck size. That is still perfectly fine in the general scenario. There still would be, as I was writing, that if the black hole has shrunk to the size of one-tenth of its mass or to the mass of the moon, there still would be this long throated inside geometry in which these considerations will go through. It could be that I am answering something which you did not ask because we only got faint idea about your question. What we could do is to do email or Skype each other.
So let's conclude today's session by thanking the speaker once again. Thank you, everyone.